to see each of you. We're going to be picking up this evening in Judges chapter 18. If you've read on into Judges chapter 18, you understand that it's really a continuation of what we've been discussing in Judges chapter 17 that Larry went through on Sunday morning. And so we are going to begin with a review. If we just started right at the beginning of Judges 18, verse 1, it would probably be a little bit confusing, especially if some of you weren't here Sunday morning because of the weather and such. So let's do a little bit of a review of Judges 17 before we dig in. As Larry discussed on Sunday morning, these last several chapters in the book of Judges are really detailing a time of utter ungodliness in Israel. The children of Israel have turned their back on God. They turn their back on his ways, and during this time, they're doing what they please to do. What men want to do, they're going to carry that out. And as Larry pointed out, the Ten Commandments are really an interesting thing to go back to think about as you read these last several chapters. How many of the commandments that they violated as you go through individual after individual from Judges chapter 17 on. But the reverence for God and his will just seems to be absent in much of these last several chapters of the book of Judges. In Judges chapter 17, we learn of a man that's named Micah. And there are some interesting characteristics that we know about Micah. He's introduced there in verse 1 of chapter 17. But we know that he was a man from the tribe of Ephraim. And pretty much right out of the gate, we learn that he's a thief. We are told about how he stole 1,100 pieces of silver. From who? His own mom. Yeah, his own mother. And so, obviously, this is not a man of great integrity, at least from the introduction we know. And we know that this theft obviously violated one of the Ten Commandments. We know Exodus chapter 20, verse 15 clearly states, "Thou shalt not steal, you shall not steal." And Micah obviously didn't have any regard for that when he stole this very large sum of money from his own mother. And so his mother proclaims a curse. More than likely, the curse was directed in some way toward the thief. Micah overheard the curse, and what does he do? He confesses, it's me, I'm the one that stole it, and here's your money back. And so he gives this 1,100 pieces of silver back to his mother. From there, we know that there's a definite embrace of idolatry on the part of Micah's mother and on the part of Micah. Because as you read in chapter 17, what does Micah's mother do with 200 shekels of that silver? That's right. Goes to a silversmith and has a molten image made and a graven image made with this, with some of this money. And then that image or those two images are given to who? Micah. And Micah sets them up. And so Micah and his mother both embraced idolatry. Again, we see this as a violation, a very clear violation of the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, verses 3 through 5. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself any idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me. So, very clear, egregious, just disregard for God. Being seen here with Micah and his mother and how he has embraced idolatry. We are told specifically that he did have a shrine. He had an ephod. He had household idols. If you look at the King James there, a teraphim might be mentioned, which was like household idols. And he even consecrated one of his sons to be his priest. So just a blatant disregard for God's commands. As you continue in chapter 17, we also learn of a character that's going to be a very important person to discuss in chapter 18. And it's this young man. The young man is from Bethlehem in Judah, but he's a Levite. And as we're introduced to this man, we know that for some reason or another, he's sojourning. He's traveling from place to place, and he ends up arriving at Micah's home. And when Micah learns that this young man is a Levite, what does he want? Be my priest. He knows he's a Levite, and he thinks if he has a Levite as his priest, it will somehow validate his religion. Which, will it validate his religion? No, he's an idolater. And you see how egregious and how just ridiculous that is when you read that and you say that out loud. But he somehow thought that by having a Levite as priest, the other things he was doing would somehow be validated. And so Micah desired for the young man to be a father and a priest to him. If he agreed to this, Micah would give him housing. So there's a little bit of a deal here. He's going to give him housing. He'll give him 10 pieces of silver a year. He'll give him clothes. He'll even provide a maintenance, which I'm sure would have probably been necessities of life and food. So he offers all this to this young man if he will be his priest. And the young man agrees to this offer. And so Micah takes this young man and he becomes his priest. Micah consecrates him and makes him his priest. In verse 11 of chapter 17, we read that the Levite agreed to live with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. So you see a very close relationship and bond being created here. But again, you read verse 13, then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will prosper me, seeing I have a Levite as priest." You just see again a blatant disregard for the commands of God, that he thinks somehow his religion is going to be validated by having this man as his priest. The key verse of all of this is probably verse 6. When you read verse 6 here in Judges chapter 17, we read, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes." And that just hits the nail on the head. Everything that we're studying right now, and as we go into chapter 18, you're just seeing over and over and over again, people are just doing whatever they want to do. If they have an impulse or an urge, whether it's sinful or if it's right or wrong, they just do it. And they don't really care about what kind of a mess it makes or what kind of effect it has on others, or definitely don't have any regard for what does God say about it. They're going to do it. And you see that over and over again as you go into chapter 17, 18. Think about chapter 19, the situation with the concubine and what happens there that we're going to be discussing on Sunday. Just terrible situations going on throughout Israel because men are doing what was right in their own eyes. Over and over again. Larry made a great point in Bible class at the end of class. Is this just the case in Judges chapter 17 or in the last few chapters of Judges that you have men doing what's right in their own eyes? It's going on today. And Larry discussed that very well, that is still going on today, that you have so many people who are seeking their own righteousness, their own ways of religion. You even think about how many people have utterly rejected just any semblance of good whatsoever, that everything that they do is very debased and very wicked. But then you have many people who are kind of like Micah and like his mother, where they claim to be religious. They claim to have some semblance of religion, but really are they being followers of God at all? No, their hearts are far from him. Micah thought that, you know, he would be blessed for his idolatry. And Micah's like many people who follow false religions today. There's people who are superstitious and they're ignorant of what true worship is. You know, Micah had an image. He had an ephod. He had priests. He had all these things that he thought were religious things that would be pleasing to the Lord. And his heart was far from the Lord. He was doing the exact opposite of what God would have wanted him to do. So we see just a very difficult, terrible time in Israel because of people doing what's right in their own eyes. And that sets us up for Judges chapter 18. So let's begin by looking at these first six verses in Judges chapter 18. "In those days, there was no king of Israel. And in those days, the tribes of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. For until that day, an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel. So the sons of Dan sent from their family five men out of their whole number, valiant men from Zorah and Eshtol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, 'Go search the land.' And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. When they were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned aside there and said to him, 'Who brought you here? And what are you doing in this place?' "And what do you have here?" He said to him, or said to them, "Thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest." They said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous." The priest said to them, "Go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval." Again, we're reminded of this time period that we're dealing with, in which these things occurred. It was during the time in which there was no king in Israel. That's a repeat of what we just read in Judges chapter 17 and verse 6. So these things occurred prior to there being a king in Israel. During this time, the tribe of Dan had still not received their land inheritance. So as Israel came into the promised land and they were taking different areas, there were certain tribes that did not get the land of their inheritance. And if you look at Judges chapter 1, several of those tribes are listed. Dan was one of them that did not get their land inheritance. And if you look specifically, it's in Judges chapter 1, verse 34. It states, "Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down into the valley." So the tribe of Dan was not settled where they had not taken their land possession as of this point. So that is why we're seeing here there's going to be five spies that are going to go out searching for land, because they have not gotten their true land inheritance yet. So the five men of the Danites are sent out. These men are described as valiant men. It says that they came from Zorah and Eshtol. And they go out with a purpose to spy out the land, to search it, and they send them to go search the land. So five men out of this great number are chosen to go do this job. These five men arrive at the house of Micah. And when they go to the house of Micah, they recognize someone's voice. Whose voice do they recognize? The young man, the Levite. Now, Scripture does not record how did they recognize this voice. Some commentators say maybe it was an accent that he had, or maybe they possibly had met the man, or I don't know. Scripture doesn't reveal that. But we do know that they recognized this man's voice. We do know that this man was a sojourner in some ways and had traveled around. So maybe someone had encountered him before. I don't know. But the five men asked the Levite about what he was doing there. Why was he at Micah's? What was going on? And so after they learn that this man is there and that he is a priest, that's the title that he says he has, obviously being Micah's priest, they want him to inquire of God. Well, if you're a priest, why don't you inquire of God and see if what we're doing is going to be prosperous? If us going, you know, and searching the land is going to be a beneficial thing, and if this is going to work out. So it makes sense for them to do that. Obviously, again, as far as they're thinking he's a priest. Again, are they being involved in idolatry, though? Yes, they are. But they ask him to inquire of God. In verse 6, the priest said to them, "Go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval." So this priest who is an idolater tells these five men who are these spies from the tribe of Dan, "Go in peace. The way you're going is going to be approved by the Lord." So it's giving them affirmation that where you're going is going to work out for you. Okay? Do we have any comments or questions so far? That's a great point. Yeah, it shows that everyone involved up to this point, they're all wrapped up in idolatry. They're all wrapped up in it. A red flag should have gone off when he said, "I'm a priest for Micah," and things that, you know, but you just see, they're all wrapped up in this idolatrous attitude and disposition. Nobody's revering God as they should. Yes, sorry.
I was just going to say, you can also through 48, and it talks about the Danites losing their. They got their allotment, but they lost it. It
right.
It in that location.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Yeah, facts.
You mentioned there that the first one was no king in Israel. And you wonder if when it says that, it also means they were deprived of king, their king God.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Not here. I think the story
right?
Where they were all at, physically and spiritually. In the next two or three chapters, it continues to paint more dysfunction as a society, not just individuals' actions, but their whole society was just turned upside down and didn't know right from wrong. They were calling right from wrong and wrong right. And we see that in our society today, there's a point where you leave God.
That's right. The compass is just gone completely. All right, let's continue on. Let me show you this real quick. So here's a map, and I wanted to point out a couple things. First of all, the yellow arrow is the area of Dan, where they were currently, at the beginning of chapter 18. So this is an area close to the land of the Philistines. You can see that it borders Ephraim and Benjamin. The green arrow here is Bethlehem of Judah, which is where the young priest came from. So you can see, not terribly far from where Zorah is. Zorah is the blue arrow right here, which is on that southern border. And this is Zorah and Eshtal. Eshtal is not listed on the map, but they were very close together, if you look at some of the other maps we have tonight. So these were the two cities where the five spies came from, and they were chosen from. And these two cities were there on the border. Where else have we heard of Zorah before? Zorah was the birthplace of who? Who was born in Zorah? Samson. Yeah. So we have discussed this area before. Then the red arrow here is Ephraim, the hill country of Ephraim. We don't know specifically where Micah's house was in Ephraim. We know it was a hill country, but somewhere in this region is where you have Micah's house. So you can picture these five men traveling from this southern area of Zorah and traveling up into Ephraim and going north. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves into verse 7, but where do the five spies end up on the map? What town do they end up in? What city? Laish. Where is Laish on the map? Look at the ceiling. way up there. So this is quite the trek. This is about 100 to 125 miles. So where they would have encountered Micah, the house of Micah, would have been fairly early on in the trip. It was a hill country, so maybe it was a little bit more difficult, and that's why they stopped there. I don't know. But this is quite a distance, and they end up all the way up here in Laish is the city that they're going to be headed toward. Okay? Let's continue on, verses 7 through 10. Then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were in it living securely, after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure. For there was no ruler humiliating them for anything in the land, and they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. When they came back to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtal, their brother said to them, "What do you report?" They said, "Arise, let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And will you sit still? Do not delay to go, to enter, to possess the land. When you enter, you will come to a secure people with a spacious land, for God has given it into your hand, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth." So when these five men arrive at Laish, what do they think? Here it is. I mean, everything they say about Laish just sounds amazing. They discuss how it's a quiet area. The people that are living there, it's quiet, it's secure. No nation or ruler is oppressing the area, so they don't have to worry about, you know, running someone out of town as far as some oppressive government or some oppressive ruler being there. They were far away from the Sidonians, which meant that if someone did attack them, If Dan attacks them, there's not going to be a lot of help there to help them out. There's no aid close by. So Laish was practically isolated in a lot of ways and very vulnerable for attack. And they saw that. The five spies came back to Dan. And when they got back to Dan, they were asked, "What do you report?" And so they told the people that the land was very good. And they told them, "We need to arise and we need to go up against them. We need to go attack them." And in verse 10, it details the place as being spacious. It's a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth. So it makes you think about when the spies went out and called the place the land of milk and honey. It makes you think about a place that was just, wow, We've got to go. And so they seem very eager to tell everybody in Dan, we need to go. Tell all the Danites that it's time to attack. In verse 10, the men make an interesting point here, and they say, "For God has given it into your hand." Why would they make that statement? The priest told them that. The priest told them that. Micah's priest said, you know, they asked him to petition and inquire of the priest, and he said, it's going to be in your hand, and it's going to be, you know, a good journey and such. So they're leaning on this this disposition, and they believe that God has given it into their hand. All right? Now let's look at verses 11 and through 13. "Then the family of the Danites, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, 600 men, armed with weapons of war, set out. They went up and camped at Kiriath-Jearim in Judah. Therefore they called that place Mahanah-Dan to this day. Behold, it is west of Kiriath-Jearim. They passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah." So the people of Dan, they hear this report from the five spies. Obviously, it's a very positive report. So they agree to send men to take the city. From the cities of Zorah and Eshtaol, they select 600 men who set out with weapons of war to go up against Laish. Does 600 men sound like a large number? It really doesn't. And you really think that number seems somewhat small. We know from Numbers chapter 26, verse 43, when the census was taken in the book of Numbers, that you had 64,400 men that were 20 years old or upward who were capable of fighting from the tribe of Dan. So this is not a small number of people. We don't know if that's the same number now, obviously. This is years later. But this is not, 600 people is not a lot of people. Why would they only be sending 600 people? No resistance from everything the spy said. It sounds like you're not going to really put up a fight. 600 men will probably do the job. And also, who's going to be with them, they said? God's going to be with them. So why would we send, you know, a huge fleet if we can send 600 men? So it definitely seems like that's the reason why. This area, they're not going to be able to defend themselves. And they believe they could capture it with ease because the Lord would be with them. So the men, they camped at Kiriath-Jearim in Judah. Kiriath-Jearim was on the west border of Benjamin, on the part of the east border of Dan. And then they passed down from there and arrived at the house of Micah. So these 600 men go to the house of Micah. As we continue reading, it gets interesting as we continue on here at the house of Micah. Beginning in verse 14, "Then the five men who went to spy out the country of Laish said to their kinsmen, 'Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and a house and household gods and a graven image and a molten image? Now, therefore, consider what you should do.' They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. The 600 men armed with their weapons of war, who were the sons of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. Now the five men who went to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. Verse 18, when these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, 'What are you doing?' They said to him, 'Be silent, put your hand over your mouth, and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest in the house of one man, or to be a priest to the tribe and a family in Israel?' The priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the household idols and the graven image and went among the people." So after the 600 men had set out, as we just read a moment ago, the five spies told their Danite kinsmen about Micah's idols. It says here in verse 14, "Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and household idols and a graven image and a molten image?" And then, so it shows that the five spies, they knew about the existence of these idols, It was apparent to them. The spies told the men specifically about these items and then said to them, "Now therefore, consider what you should do." What is this statement implying? Yeah, there's idols in there. You decide what you should do. Well, why is he even mentioning it unless like there's some ambition to take it? And I mean, that seems the implication that they want the idols. The five men want the idols. They tell them that the other men about the idols. And so steal the idols practically. And that's the indication here. That seems to be the motive, is that they desire to have the idols in their possession. And so with this information, they came to the house of Micah and they met with the young man, this young Levite. While the priest met with the 600 soldiers at the entrance of the gate, the five men go in and they begin to steal and ransack this house and take these idols out that belong to Micah. When the priest saw what they were doing, he obviously says, "You know, what are you doing?" He sees them stealing these idols. And they tell him to be silent, to put his hand over his mouth. And they tell him to do what? Come with us. And they make a really good point to him as far as, you know, right now you are a priest for one man. You're a priest in the house of Micah. Wouldn't you much rather be the priest for all of the Danites? A whole tribe? Do you think that was enticing to him? Obviously. Scripture said it made his heart what? Made his heart glad when he heard that. And so he agrees. And so he gathers up these idols. And he takes them on the trip. And he leaves and departs. So at this point, you have Micah's idols and Micah's priest heading out toward Laish with these individuals. Now, I'm going to point something out real quick before we read the next scripture. How many people do we have right now that are assembled in this area? There's something I want you to ponder as we go into this next verse, because I've been pondering it too. We know that there were five spies, correct? And we discussed that earlier. They went out and saw Laish and then came back. And then there were, at this point, 600 men of war that went to the house of Micah, right? When you look at verse 14, you now have five men, the five spies, going to the house of Micah. And it says they said to their kinsmen. Are the kinsmen the 600 men? Are the kinsmen the Danites? Now, the reason I want you to ponder that is in just a minute, there's children involved. There are children here. Because when they depart in a minute, there are children. And that's interesting. Upon my first several reads of this, I thought, there's 600 men, and the five spies went along, and that's that. It seems like we've got Dan moving. They're migrating. And it says in verse 14, then the five men who went to spy out the country. So after the 600 men got to Micah's house, they're there. Then you had the five spies say to the kinsmen, to the Danites, say something about the idols. Then they go to the house of Micah. And so let me continue reading to see what you think. In verse 21, this is what I was talking about. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. When they had gone some distance from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. They cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you have assembled together?" He said, "You have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and have gone away. And what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, 'What is the matter with you?'" The sons of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, or else fierce men will fall upon you, and you will lose your life with the lives of your household." So the sons of Dan went on their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. So it's interesting here that as you're reading, when you reach verse 21, You learn that they're leaving with these idols, they're leaving with this priest that belongs to Micah, and they're heading toward Laish, not having conquered Laish yet. But it says that they put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. Does anyone have any comments or thoughts about what you think about that? Does that sound right to you, that more of them have migrated at this point? And it's interesting because they haven't conquered Laish yet. They haven't even gotten there yet at this point. So it's just interesting. I think it's interesting now that you've got, you know, livestock and little ones involved, stated here.
But Greg, go back to what you said earlier about in numbers. Mm-hmm. In the census section, they had to meet certain qualifications to be counted as men of war.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's right.
More
with them than 600.
600
right, and we know the point all along is for them to migrate in mass number. That was the goal. Yeah. But I think the thens are very important. That time, as time had passed in some of these things. Uh-huh. Gary? Yeah, they seem very, that's a great point. They seem very comfortable going on and moving up there. That's right. That's right. So in verse 21, it states that they stole the idols, they put the little ones and the livestock and valuables in front of them. So it does seem like you possibly have a large group now migrating toward Laish. And as they traveled some distance, Micah and the men who live near him, they overtook the men of Dan. So Micah realizes that his idols are gone. The people that lived in the houses around Micah realize that the idols are gone. So they go chase down this group of Danites. And when they get there, they're saying, "What are you doing?" And he points out, you took my idols. You took my priest. Well, how can you say to me, what are you doing? You know, and it's kind of just like ridiculous to him. So Micah tells them they had done these egregious things and they had robbed them. Again, do we see one of God's commands being disobeyed? Had they stolen? Yes. The tribe of Dan had again stolen. You shall not steal, Exodus 20, verse 15. So the men of Dan practically told Micah to drop the issue. And he brings this up and says, "You've stolen my idols, you've stolen my priests." He says, "If you don't stop, what's going to happen to you? I'm going to kill you, you're going to be killed, and your household's going to be killed." So it says, just drop it. So why doesn't Micah fight him? He's not strong enough, obviously. And so he goes home. He goes home without his idols. He goes home without his priest. And that's that. And off go the Danites with these graven images, molten images, go down the list, and his priest. Off they go, traveling north. Again, is there anything positive to say about any of this? No. As far as these are people that are doing wicked things and they're just causing more wretched wickedness everywhere they go with no regard for godliness whatsoever. Yeah. Any other comments you all would like to add? Okay. That's right. They thought they were to some degree. That's right. That's right.
And so, there's one point I keep thinking about that we haven't considered is that all priests are Levites, but not all Levites are priests.
That's right.
So if he's just called a Levite, not a priest, then that means he's not from the portion of Levi that was dedicated to the priest.
Right. And Micah consecrated him, you know? And Micah consecrated his own son prior to that. I mean, there's just no rhyme or reason for any of the things. They're just doing what they want to do. It sounds good, so do it.
That's another area in which they've broken the law because not every Levite could serve as a priest.
Yeah, it's religion today. I mean, it is. I mean, it is. It's religion today. It sounds good. Why not? Right? Well, because God didn't authorize it. That's the answer. But you have to think about those things and seek godliness to come to that conclusion. I did want to show these maps real quick. The one on the left shows this a little bit of this journey as they traveled up. And you can see that there's some disagreement a little bit on the path that they may have taken. We obviously don't know for sure. But some believe that they would have traveled up along the west side of the Sea of Galilee as they traveled up and then crossed the Jordan River pretty far north to get over to Laish. In this one over here on the right, you see that they have them crossing the Jordan River early on. about halfway, I guess you could say, between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And then they came up on the east side of the Sea of Galilee there and then arrived at Laish. Regardless, this track would have been around 100 to 125 miles ballpark. So it was quite a distance for them to travel and to migrate across this terrain. And knowing also this is all hill country through Ephraim, especially on the early part of the track, or early part of the trip. Okay, on Sunday morning, we'll pick up right here in verse 27. Okay, thank you all.